faith and obedience. So yes, as Brad said, we are kind of closing out our series on our cultural values, or as Brad introduced them, our family values, which I really like as a framing for this. And I think as I was preparing for this, I think it's easy to, at least my experience of talks about obedience is it's very much about the, you know, God gives you something to do, how do you then go and do it? And I think, you know, we need those moments that matters, how you say yes in the moment and take a step in the right direction, do the next right thing. But I want to kind of take the long view a little bit in terms of what does obedience look like across years, not just moments, but and what does a life of a repeated yes look like? It's what Eugene Peterson called a long obedience in the same direction. That was the name of his memoir. It's a great memoir if you get a chance to read it. But what does it look like to continually point your life towards what God has for you? Because it's not enough, as we know, to do something right now and then fall away. Or as John Tyson says, you know, I'm going to do a 40-day fast. You attempt it and then you fall away really quickly and then you fail and you go back to the same old lifestyle. We have to find a way to sustain the yes that and the motivation. It reminds me of, I don't know if anyone read a book by James Cass. It's an old book now called Finite and Infinite Games. It's, you know, you can't just play the finite games, the games that end. You've got to figure out what your infinite game is. That's kind of the, you know, secular psychological way of thinking about it. But we know that motivation is like this as well. It's not just enough to have the day-to-day motivation. I'll try not to lean too much on running analogies, but I'm less than a month away from my next race, so my brain is work, family, and training at the moment. So, and most of my brain is training. But it's not enough to have, like, I absolutely need the motivation when my alarm goes off at 4 a.m. to get up, get my gear on, and get out the door. But it's not enough sometimes. I also need the motivation of, hey, I've entered this thing and I want to actually go there and do the race, run the race and complete it in the time that I've set. And then even more than that, I want to be the sort of person that actually values that and can put my feet on the ground and say, I'm going to be a runner. That to me is the infinite game, is I want to be that person that is a lifelong learner and a lifelong lover of movement and running and all of those sorts of things. I'm not saying you guys have to get into it in that way, but we know that motivation works at all of those levels. It's not enough to just have one level of motivation. You know, we have a bias for intensity. We love intensity because, like things that are acute, which is just like, you know, you go to the conference, someone taps you on the forehead, you fall out in the spirit, and it's like you have this encounter. It's like, if it was always like that, we'd love it, because it's just like, I just go and get a top-up every week, and, you know, someone prays for me, and I just, and it like, but as we know, the Christian life isn't like that. It's not a series of intense moments where it's not like fueling up the car, where you go and you park, and you fill up the car, and then you go, okay, now I'm good to go again. It's a repeated practice and a repeated yes to the things of the Spirit. We need that consistency. And to me, obedience is really summed up in this moment from Jesus in the end of the Gospel of John. It's this moment in John 14:15. This is the moment where Jesus knows that the cross is imminent. He knows what's going to happen. His death is imminent, and it's the final moment with his disciples, and he just lays it all out. And there's this moment where he says, if you love me, you will keep my commands, or you will keep my commandments. I think how you read this really depends on your framing. I think it'd be really easy if you had an orphan or a scarcity mindset to come to this passage and think that Jesus is saying, all right, if you really love me, if you loved me, you would do what I say. If you really loved, like some of you might have heard that kind of messaging from authorities in your life, from your parents maybe even. If you love me, if you really loved me, you would do this thing for me. I don't think that's Jesus' tone. I don't think that's the tone that he takes. Because he's talking to deep friends. He's talking to intimate disciples who have spent 3 years with him walking in ministry. So to me, the tone of Jesus is, because of the loving, intimate relationship that we have, I know that you will continue to do the things that I've told you to do. And that, to me, is the story of obedience. It's actually a journey of maturity and a journey of intimacy, that we get to the point where, because of our love for who Christ is, we actually, it's not about instruction anymore. It just becomes about, I love you so much, I'm going to do the things that you have set out for me to do. If we talk about faith, faith is about trust in the person of Jesus. I think there's a belief component to faith, which we tend to lean on. When we think about faith, we tend to talk about, do you have a faith? Which is kind of shorthand for, do you believe in the truth claims of Christianity? But to me, there's also an active kind of doing part of faith. When somebody works in ministry for years and years and years, what do we say? We call them faithful. We say they've got faithfulness. There is a consistency element. There is a kind of a works element to faith, which is that it's not enough to just kind of have the belief and have a mental assent to some sort of idea and subscribe to like the truth claim, but you actually have to live in accordance with that. So faith is about not just the belief, but living in accordance with the belief. If you truly believe something, it will inform your actions. And obedience then is trust with skin on. It's trust with actions attached to it. It's forgiveness when it's costly. It's repentance when our pride is stirring up inside us. It's generosity when our fear says to hold back. And it's that integrity to do the right thing when no one is watching. It's not about legalism. It's not about works, righteousness, and, you know, working to be okay, working to belong. And it's not a passive grace with no transformation. We receive acceptance first, and then obedience is our response. We receive the love of Christ, and if we love him, we will keep his commands. I mentioned really liking the framing of family values, I think, because when I think about the journey of maturity, it really mirrors the journey of a family. I've said before that, you know, the function of a family is to produce well-adjusted, independent adults who can go out into the world and contribute to human flourishing in some form. That's why we get together in families. That's my theory of it anyway. You can disagree with that. And so I want to kind of mirror our journey of maturity in the Christian walk against, you know, infancy to child to young adult to parent. And to me, it's an important model, because the thing about being in a family is we don't shame infancy. We don't, when we have a child and they're learning to do something, we don't shame them about their inability to walk or talk or, no right from wrong, no hot from cold, no all of those things. You know, children in their first years of life they're dependent. They need a lot of help. Hello, did you hear your name? But we don't shame infancy, but we also don't normalize lifelong in infancy. If our children aren't developing at the rate that they need to, that's not a good thing. That's like, that requires intervention. So the same happens in the church. We don't shame people who are in those early stages, but we also want to draw them up into the mature adults, the mature followers that Jesus has destined them to be. So healthy life has stages, and so healthy discipleship does too. So stage one is really that adoption, that identity is received before performance. We are loved as sons and daughters well before we are instructed to do anything. And we obey from belonging, not for belonging. Romans 8 talks about, for all who are being led by the Spirit of God, these are sons and daughters of God. For you have not received a spirit of slavery leading to fear again, but you have received a spirit of adoption as sons and daughters, by which we cry out, Abba, Father. The Spirit himself testifies with our spirit that we are children of God. And if we are children, heirs also, heirs of God and fellow heirs with Christ, if we indeed suffer with him, so that we may also be glorified with him. Such a fundamental core truth of following Jesus, that if we can't receive that adoption and that belonging ahead of time, you end up with orphans who are trying to work to belong. They're trying to work to earn the affection of the Father that they've already internally enjoyed. This creates a trust in the Father's goodness and an emotional security in God's love. In psychology, with children, we would call this secure attachment. If a child doesn't get secure attachment in infancy, there's problems. Like that's trauma at some level. And we receive in this stage a freedom from this fear-driven spirituality where, will I have enough? Will I be loved? Will I belong? Those questions are kind of catered for when we know and we receive the adoptive love of the Father. Otherwise, we end up in that performance Christianity. We end up in comparison and insecurity and this cycle of shame. Hi, baby. So we don't shame infancy. We don't lump shame on people who are in this stage. And the other thing I'd say about the stage of adoption is don't rush out of it prematurely. If you are in a stage where you need to receive the love of the Father, stay there until you actually, really in the core of your being, know that you are loved and know that you belong. Because if you rush out and you think, all right, I've been sitting in here for, you know, months now, I need to go and get useful. I need to go and be useful to Brad. So I'm going to go and sign up for this, that, and the other. And some people rush out of this stage and they haven't fully received the revelation that they are known and loved. And what does that create? It creates a whole bunch of mess. We can all think of times where people have rushed forward and they've ministered out of this place of need, of lack, of fear, and it creates a big mess because you can't have orphans raising sons. You can't have orphans actually bringing people into the family. So you need to know that you are actually adopted into the family before you can deliver that to other people. You know, every time you get on a flight, what do they say? They say, put your own mask on first before helping others. It's like you are no use to anyone passed out on the floor. So if you love those around you, you will fix your own mask on first, make sure you're sorted, and then take care of those around you. From there we move to, and this is just this is a little bit stage theory, but it's a framework. It's not a formula. It's just a way of thinking about it. I don't want to create some formula in your mind, but it's a way of thinking about a maturity journey. But from there we move into this real apprenticeship model. And this is the model that Jesus favored when he called his disciples to him. It wasn't, here's a bunch of stuff to read and I'm going to go away and then I'll come back and then you make sure you've studied up. It was follow me. It was model your life around my life. Give up what you know to come and sit with me and learn in this apprentice model. It's that I do, you watch. So Jesus does and we watch. And then we do, and then you do, I watch, and then eventually you do and someone else watches as you go on to replicate that. And this is where most of discipleship life happens. And it can feel repetitive. It can feel... this is where I think lots of people burn out because, as I said before, it's an infinite game. I don't think you ever really arrive. I remember seeing on social media one time somebody had kind of disconnected away from a church, and one of their main criticisms was, you know, I just don't know when this heart healing thing gets done. And I thought, yeah, you're going to have a hard time if that's you, if that's how you're feeling about it. But like, as we well know, it's a lifelong journey. It's a long obedience in the same direction. And sometimes that can feel like drudgery. That can feel tedious. Moving in the same direction, you know, it could just feel like, I feel like I've been here before. This is really the place of formation. This is really the stage where we submit to that constant practice. This is where the practices become important, where we receive correction, where there's repentance, where there's repetition over and over. We do that again and again. And our obedience is tested under pressure. Again, it's that consistency over intensity. We'd love to just, you know, do the short course and come out with the qualification. But it is the long, slow work of discipleship that's going to get us there. This is what the writer of the Hebrews says. Says, "For though by this time you ought to be teachers, you have need again for someone to teach you the elementary principles of the actual words of God." It's harsh. "And you have come to need milk and not solid food. For everyone who partakes only of milk is unacquainted with the word of righteousness, for he is an infant. But solid food is for the mature, who because of practice have their senses trained to distinguish between good and evil." So maturity is reached through practice, through the constant resilience to submit again and again. And we build that capacity to obey and say yes when it's costly. And then eventually we move to a stage of maturity. And these ebb and flow, I think. You might find yourself moving around. But to me, this echoes those words of Jesus in John 15 again, where at some point he says, "No longer do I call you slaves, because slaves don't know what the master is up to, but I have called you friends." And obedience from at this point moves from bare compliance to a shared intention. It kind of echoes Romans 8, that talks about, you know, be transformed by the renewing of your mind, and then you will know his will. Like, it's like as we progress into this renewed mind state, we actually get to discern what the will of God is. And what does that mean? It doesn't mean that we can say, "Well, I know that's what you want, God, but I'm going to do it this way." It's actually so that we can have a shared intention with God, so that the will of God becomes our will, so that we are renewed in a way that our mind aligns with the mind of Christ and we go, "Oh, this is our will. This is, you know," Paul says, "it's no longer I, but Christ who lives in me." Because his alignment, there's an alignment between the values that he has and the actions that he takes. And it's about increasingly discerning the Father's heart and not just following the rules or following the laid out path before you. And so that question shifts to, what is the Father doing and how do I join? Because that's Jesus' posture, right? He says, "I only do what I see the Father doing." And the markers of this stage are steadiness under pressure, integrity over image. You know, there's lots of turmoil in in the Christian influencer space at the moment, unfortunately. And there's lots of people being unmasked and lots of integrity kind of falling away because people haven't built this mature relationship. If we fail to actually embed this, then what do? We progress past our stage of maturity and we learn Christian theatre. I'm sick of Christian theatre. I don't like Christian theatre, which is just that you learn the script, you learn all of the things that you need to do and say and the appearance that you need to keep up and the costume that you put on, and we show up and we play our part and it all looks really nice and clean, but nothing has happened on the inside. When you walk off stage, there's no change. We haven't actually been transformed. We've just learnt how to play the part. And we move in this stage to not just taking responsibility for ourselves, but taking responsibility for others. And this is a love that is durable. Ephesians 4 talks about that fivefold ministry, and it ends with, until we attain to the unity of the faith and of the knowledge of the Son of God, to a mature man, to the measure of the stature which belongs to the fullness of Christ. But speaking the truth in love, we are to grow up in all aspects into him who is the head, that is Christ. It's one thing to talk about becoming Christ-like, but this is Paul saying, you know, this is the function of the church, is to actually pull you into maturity so that you can... Hello. So that you can be in the fullness of Christ. God loves the Son so much that he wants to fill the earth with people just like him. And finally, we move to the last stage, which is reproduction. You know, go and make disciples. That's the commission of Jesus. Go and make disciples of all nations, teaching them to follow all that I commanded you. So discipleship can't end on just private growth. It's great when we reach those moments for ourselves, but maturity reproduces. It's, you know, we talked about moving from consumer to contributor, and that's one of the core movements of that whole journey, is that we move from thinking about our own needs into looking out to see what the needs of others are around us. It's a spiritual parenthood that we move into, where we begin to give life away. Our life becomes about the others that we're taking care of, and we help others mature. We need mothers and fathers in a place like this to actually draw this stuff out of individuals in our community. So and the end goal of our journey is not just the admiration of Jesus, but it's the imitation of Jesus that reproduces in others what we have seen in him. Prompts me to think of, who is my someone else? Who is my someone in my life that I'm building into in that way? We come to that steady place that we, you know, we've probably all known people who are living in the enjoyment of the fruit of a life well lived. You know those people, those faithful saints. You know those people who you just look at and you go, oh, you've arrived at this place where there's a calm and a settledness in your soul, where you just walk daily with the Lord. And that maturity, it's not about perfection. It's not about reaching some place where there's nothing wrong with us anymore. It's just about an increased reliability and an increased capacity to love, and a greater capacity to carry responsibility for others. As we come into a close, I just want to give you a couple opportunities to respond. The first is just a check-in, to just say, where am I in this journey? Where do I find myself? Do I know I'm loved apart from my performance? Am I consistent in training? Am I consistent in practice? Am I able to discern the Father's heart? Am I actively looking for opportunities to help others follow Jesus. We're not diagnosing ourselves to feel terrible about where we are, but just to take that next faithful step. And the best thing we can do in moments like this is just actually be realistic with ourselves and be truly self-aware. It doesn't help you to try and put yourself somewhere where you're not, because that's where you feel like you should be. You know, it's like, it basically echoes what John Tyson's saying. It's like, start where you are, not where you should be, or you feel like you should be. And for some of us, maybe there's a thought of, who is your someone else? Who are you helping apprentice to Jesus? Maybe there's some names and practical steps that you can take this week. Father, I just thank you that you reveal yourself not as a distant God. You reveal yourself as a Father who brings us in and adopts us into a family. And we just ask that, I just ask that there would be endurance where there's been weariness, where there's been burnout and just heartache. I just ask that there would be a fresh endurance that comes for those who have been walking this road. And I just ask for boldness, that we would, that we'd be able to actually be real with ourselves and be real with you. That we could find the breakthrough that we need to actually move forward in our journey of maturity and following you. We just thank you for the love that you have for us. We just choose to rest into that.